Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. June 1944, 65 years ago this month, President Roosevelt signed the GI Bill into law. Soldiers, sailors, marines, and airmen poured from the battlefronts of Europe, Africa, and the Pacific into the lecture halls of America's universities, into new suburbs, lives, careers. Looking back, many have seen that one piece of legislation as transformative for America's economy and society. Now a new generation of fighting men and women are on the battlefields in Iraq and Afghanistan and coming home. A new GI Bill goes into effect this summer. This hour, On Point, the rich history of the original GI Bill and what America will do for a new generation of veterans. You can join the conversation. What stories have been passed down to you about the GI Bill and how it shaped your family, our country? What about now and the veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan? Are we doing the right thing? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook. At On Point Radio, here before the GI Bill, the original was signed July 28, 1943, in a fireside chat, FDR talked about providing for returning soldiers.
While concentrating on military victory, we're not neglecting the planning of the things to come, the freedoms which we know will make for more decency and greater justice throughout the world. Among many other things, we are today laying plans for the return to civilian life of our gallant men and women in the armed services.
FDR, 1943. And once it was signed, 1944, here's a short little bit from a short film made by the U.S. military to try and explain the new benefits.
The GI Bill of Rights is not a reward or a handout or a gravy train, but rather an American way to make it easier for each man to take his place once again in the community and get some of those things for which he went to war. A job, a business, an education, a home.
And that's a lot. Not a handout or a gravy train or a reward, said the U.S. military then. Joining me now from Ithaca up in New York is Glenn Altshuler, professor of American Studies at Cornell University. He's co-author with Stuart Blumen of the new book, The GI Bill, A New Deal for Veterans. And it's a pretty darn good book. Glenn Altshuler, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Pleasure to be here.
It's quite a story, and you remind us right off the bat that this is by no means the way it had always been for American soldiers after war, that after World War I, they came home from Europe and they got $60 for a train ticket, and good luck to you, soldier.
And not much more. And of course, in the ensuing years, there was recession and then depression, and they kept asking the government for some assistance. And the memory of the catastrophe of World War I, with former soldiers sitting on street corners selling apples, had a lot to do with the extraordinary preparation and the array of benefits provided in the GI Bill of 1944.
Glenn Altshuler, we're going to look at what's going on now, but before we do, just to get a sense of the incredible history here and the incredible scale coming out of World War II, this was 15 or 16 million men and women coming back to this country. That just, I guess, could not be ignored economically, socially, any way you slice it.
Well, there was no way to ignore that many million people, especially men and women who had fought the good war. And they were going to come back and vote. They were going to come back and rejoin their communities. And no politician could ignore them. And quite frankly, no politician wanted to ignore them.
The scale of consequences from this legislation, though, the way people describe it, I mean, you've got people in the book presenting it more or less as the key to American peace and plenty in the American century. How did it come? How has it come to be seen with that centrality to what happened economically, socially, culturally, post-World War II?
Well, you know, Tom, in my view, I often call it the mother of all stimulus packages. Mm. And in many respects, it it was, many people forget that not only did it provide the opportunity for millions of former soldiers to go to a college or university, but it provided unemployment benefits, it provided sub-college training, it provided Veterans Administration guaranteed loans to finance the purchase of homes, farms, or businesses. And so it has to be seen, it seems to me, as a very important component in the post-war boom that made America the envy of the world in its economic engine in the 1940s and the 1950s, that this is a time when many people feared that the conversion from a wartime economy to a peacetime economy would be accompanied by recession and depression. That didn't happen, and the GI Bill played a consequential role in ensuring that it didn't happen.
Let's hear a little more from FDR, again from that fireside chat before it was all laid out, but his assurances about what he would push for returning military veterans of World War II.
I have assured our men in the armed forces that the American people would not let them down when the war is won. I hope that the Congress will help in carrying out this assurance, for obviously the executive branch of the government cannot do it alone. May the Congress do its duty in this regard. The American people will insist on fulfilling this American obligation to the men and women in the armed forces who are winning this war for us.
FDR, 1943, he says our men in the armed forces there, but of course there were many women as well. When the American Legion first pushed for this, they called it the Bill of Rights for G.I. Joe and G.I. Jane. Glenn R. Schiller, what were the politics in Washington? Was this a slam dunk? Was there just no question? Or did it look like more New Deal legislation to Republicans who had been resisting that for a long time?
I think we should remember that, especially in contrast to today, that the GI Bill passed unanimously in both the House and the Senate. But that doesn't mean that it was a slam dunk. The negotiations about the scale and scope of the GI Bill were intense, and the outcome at times was in doubt. I think one of the things that's important to remember is, and perhaps a contrast to the stimulus packages today, is that conservatives went along with this for two principal reasons. First, this was a way of allowing GIs who had made sacrifices, who had interrupted their lives to serve their country, it enabled them to resume those lives, to get those opportunities that they had sacrificed, and that was a very powerful argument.
And many, many people. I mean, Johnny Cash and Bob Dole and Joseph Heller, Norman Mailer. You've got a list here.
William Rehnquist.
Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Tito Puente, Charles Rangel, who's still, of course, very active in Congress. That list goes on. Glenn, we have callers with stories of their own about the impact of this bill in their family's life. Betsy in Nashville. You're on the air, Betsy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
This is such a subject that's really dear to my heart because my father is probably an example of a very typical story. He was born in 1921 and raised in very rural, poor part of eastern North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
His parents were sharecroppers, and he literally, when he graduated from high school, he literally did not have shoes to wear to his own high school graduation. He
wow.
went barefoot.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, he was able to get into, we didn't mention this yet, but he got into the CCC and worked on road crews at the end of the 30s. From there, he was able to get into an apprentice school opportunity back on the coast of Virginia, and a shipbuilding apprentice school. And then the war broke out. And all this time, just by an example, he was making $30 a month in the CCC and sending home $25 to help feed his family.
Did he end up in the war serving, and did he end up with the GI Bill benefits?
Yes, he he was drafted into the Navy, and because he had these skills, he was, instead of in combat, he was repairing radios on ships.
And after the war, Betsy, our time's short before the break. Take us to the claim
after
agent.
After the war, he got the GI Bill. He went. He was the first person in his family to go to college. He became an electrical engineer. Raised us, you know, we obviously had a very different life story, became all three of his kids were able to become college graduates. And I just want to say, we lose track of that. We forget that. And I just think we need to remember what an impact it made on so many people's
lives. Do you see it as having been your family's ticket out of poverty into the middle class?
Yes, I do. And we never lost the rural roots, and we love those rural roots.
Sure.
They were people without property, and this made a huge difference. And then from that point, my parents very much valued education and really encouraged all of us. So I think it made a huge difference.
Betsy, thank you for that story. Glenn Altshuler, there it is in a nutshell. I mean, this was repeated millions of times.
Tom, one good way to understand the GI Bill is to say that it opened a new route to the American dream for millions of Americans, enabling them to move into the middle class, to move up from the middle class in ways that they hadn't envisioned before.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking today about the amazing history of the GI Bill and what America is doing for a new generation of war veterans out of Iraq and Afghanistan. Glenn Altshuler joins us from Ithaca, New York. He's professor of American Studies at Cornell University, co-author of the new book, The GI Bill, A New Deal for Veterans. Glenn, we're going to hear in a minute about the benefits on their way to Iraq and Afghanistan vets. I wish you'd just walk us through the highlights of what the GI Bill ultimately offered, though, to World War II vets. What was the package, and what portion of them took advantage of what offer?
Well, as you indicated, there were almost 16 million veterans, and they were offered first unemployment compensation, so-called 5220, $20 a week for up to 52 weeks. And
this was a big deal then.
Very big deal, and since it was anticipated that maybe there might be a recession, this was thought initially to be the most important benefit, and 8.3 million of the soldiers received some unemployment
mm-hmm.
benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Then the tuition benefit for college and university was extraordinarily generous. A tuition up to $500, there was no college or university in the United States that charged more.
They could go to Harvard, Stanford, you name it. I mean, the state college or right up to the tip top, and they'd be essentially fully covered there. And they did
fully covered plus a living stipend.
Mm-hmm.
More than 2 million veterans took advantage of that. More than 5 million veterans took advantage of sub-college training to be a stenographer, a flyer, training for some kind of profession. About 5.6 million took advantage of that. About 4 million took advantage of the guaranteed loans to finance a home, a farm, or a business. And then it's important to remember, Tom, that many GIs took advantage of more than one of these provisions. So some of them got a trifecta and were able to really set themselves, establish themselves in the middle classes. Of the people, for example, who took advantage of college or university benefits, about half of them were married. Couldn't have done it in many instances otherwise.
You quote management theorist Peter Drucker saying that, you know, it may well come to be seen that this was the most important event of the 20th century for this country, the government essentially subsidized the education for these vets and signaled with that the shift to the knowledge society that we fully understand ourselves as today. I mean, that's an economic and a cultural transformation.
Yes, and for America to move into a post-industrial society, it needed engineers, it needed teachers, it needed knowledge people, as Peter Drucker says, and it did something more, Tom. it also made visible that a college education was not only necessary, but attainable, not just for the elites, but for the average guy. And as GIs made it, as they succeeded, as they got high grades, millions of Americans understood that they too could get a college or university degree. And the expansion of higher education owes itself, at least in part, to the extraordinary visibility of higher education that came out of the GI Bill.
And it was a huge expansion. Now, I think people forget now that college was seen as something sort of for the almost aristocratic, for the swells before World War II, certainly
for the swells and the wealthy, mm-hmm. Yeah. And that it wasn't seen as necessary getting the kind of job that one needed. Well, when you move into a knowledge society, it is. And when people saw that someone like themselves could not only do it, but do it successfully, that kind of aspiration became more and more the norm in America. And of course, as we know, American higher education exploded in the 1960s. So there was a little bit of a time lag after the GIs left, but that exposure, that visibility of colleges and universities was extremely important.
They literally had to drag bunkhouses off military bases onto college campuses to house a lot of these. I remember those as a very young kid back in the Midwest. Some of those were still around, maybe some today even.
Temporary Quonset huts, right, right. Putting people up in hotels.
They were there for years.
Just about anywhere.
Glenn Altshuler, please stand by. I want to bring in Rick Mays right here. He is congressional editor at the Army Times. I want to ask him about what's afoot today for vets coming home right now. Rick Mays, thank you very much for being with us.
I'm glad to be here.
So we know last summer there was a big bill passed for veterans these days. It goes into effect this August. When you hear that long roll of benefits that were there for those coming home from World War II, Rick, does it look similar to what's available to veterans today or different?
It looks remarkably similar. They've tried to do the same thing. They've tried to provide full tuition, although it may not be full tuition at every school. They're providing a substantial living allowance. It's actually quite a bit higher than it was during World War II because the cost of living is much different. There's a $1,000 a year book allowance included. There's money for tutors. You can have $1,200 for tutors. And there's a $2,000 benefit for professional licenses or certification. So it's modeled on that same idea that they used during World War II. Returning veterans should have the opportunity to receive a full college education at the expense of the government in return for their service. And there's one big difference from them. In order to appeal to the all-volunteer force that we have in the military today, mm-hmm. not the draft era that we had in World War II, people who are career service members are going to have the opportunity to transfer the benefits to their family if they don't use them themselves. And so that means not just that the veterans will be going to school, but their spouses can go to school, their children can go to school. It makes it a whole new benefit altogether.
Senator Jim Webb, Democrat of Virginia, former Navy Secretary, pushed very hard for this last summer. It's not cheap. It's supposed to cost $62 billion over 10 years. Glenn Altshuler, when you look at the new program that's being rolled out this summer, how do you look at it in comparison to what was offered after World War II?
Well, first, I think it's important to say that this bill is an enormous step forward, much more generous in its benefits than, for example, the GI Bill for Vietnam veterans. Having said that, I want to highlight a couple of differences with the original GI Bill.
Mm-hmm.
First, it's my understanding that you have to serve 3 or more years on active duty in this GI Bill.
No,
that was not the case.
Not entirely true. You get a benefit after 90 days. You don't get full tuition
right.
until you serve 3 years, but you can get 80% tuition after serving a lesser time or 60% tuition after serving a lesser time. So even
That's
reservists
right.
who were called up just for a brief period are going to get a benefit out of it.
They're going to get some benefit.
Full
They're
after 3 years,
That's
a
right.
portion along the way. So there's one. What else, Glenn?
That's right. Another a difference is that the tuition that's paid is for the most expensive public university.
In your state, wherever you're living.
In your state.
Mm-hmm.
Or to apply that sum of money to a private university, which might be more expensive.
Almost certainly would be. So it doesn't cover Harvard anymore.
It doesn't cover all colleges and universities, as the 1944 GI Bill in essence did. Now, that's still very important benefit for returning GIs, but it's going to mean that they aren't necessarily going to be able to go to the institution that they deem best for them.
But
Rick, yes?
But Tom, there is one difference. There is a matching grant program that's part of it. It's called the Yellow Ribbon Program. Mm-hmm. And in that case, when the tuition and fees exceeds the state cap,
yes,
the school agrees to lower the cost, the VA will match dollar for dollar the amount that it's lowered. So in many cases, you'll still be able to attend a private college with no tuition or very little tuition under the GI Bill. But that's a voluntary program. About 700 schools have signed up so far. The deadline for signing up was this week, and we should know by next week the list of colleges that are going to participate.
Rick, how big a step up as this program kicks in this summer? How big a step up is it for veterans coming home from current conflicts, from what they've had in recent years?
Well, we're estimating that the benefit is worth something around $85,000, $90,000 in college education. And that's probably at least half as much as the old Montgomery GI Bill that it's its predecessor. There was no living stipend before. It was a flat fee that pays you $1,300 a month for attending. Some other variances. No book allowance was available before, so the book allowance is new. It's all aimed at trying to make sure that veterans who get into college finish, and that's been a problem really since the Vietnam era where most veterans don't end up using all their benefits. It doesn't look like they're graduating from college using the GI Bill.
Rick Mays with the Army Times, thanks very much for giving us a fill on the new bill rolling out this summer. Thanks for joining us, Rick.
Sure. Happy to be here.
Thank you. Let me get a call right here from Kurt in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Sir, you're on the air.
Yes.
What's your story, Kurt?
Well, I came from the mountains of North Carolina amongst mostly foreign people who never went to college, and there was no way in the world that I would ever have been able to go had it not been for the GI Bill. And my main reason in calling today is I hope that this program will impress upon Americans that stimulus programs, properly done, really work. And I've always thought that the GI Bill of Rights after World War II was probably the greatest cultural revolution in the history of the world.
Kurt, if I may ask, how old are you now?
I'm 82.
And where and how did you serve in World War II?
Well, I joined at the bloodthirsty age of 17, and thankfully I didn't get a chance to carry that out because the war ended before I was able to go overseas. But I signed up for the infantry because I was really wanting to do my best to wipe out the enemy, all that sort of thing, waving the flag. Thank God I didn't get a chance to do anything about it, but that's my story, and I didn't go to college until 50-51, I think, because college just wasn't in our thoughts from the culture I grew up in.
And you're saying transformative not just for you, your life, your career, but for our country, our national culture.
Oh, absolutely. I can't imagine anything that's more important in the American scene today than what happened with that particular stimulus program. It totally changed my life and the lives of many other people I know. And you talk about how it worked. I went to a small college in central North Carolina and lived in a tar paper shack, which were euphemistically called veterans' housing units, you know?
Yes.
And I had like $100 a month stipend, as I remember, and we made it all through college with a wife and a child. And it was just it really changed my life totally.
Kurt, we are very grateful for your testimony, your service way back then, and 82-year-old veteran of World War II, still standing up to say it loud and proud, worked for him, worked for the country. Thank you very much for calling. I want to bring into our conversation right now from Alexandria, Virginia, Lawrence Korb, he was Assistant Secretary of Defense under Ronald Reagan, with responsibilities for recruiting and training and maintaining U.S. Facilities worldwide. He's now a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. His new book out in August is Serving America's Veterans. Lawrence Korb, welcome back to On Point. It's good to have you. Thanks for joining us today.
Nice to be with you again, Tom. And it's co-author. I have a couple other people work with me on this.
Very good. What are your thoughts as you hear, once again, the story of how the GI Bill was originally rolled out, and you look at our veterans in more recent years and today, Larry Korb?
Well, I think this bill, the Hagel-Webb bill, was a long time coming. And what people forget, as opposed to what Professor Al Shuler said, there wasn't bipartisan support for this. Secretary Gates was opposed to it, and they talked about vetoing it because they were afraid too many people, you know, would get out. And I used the GI Bill after Vietnam, and, you know, we got $100 a month. I mean, that was it. You know, none of these mm-hmm. other things. And that was really unfair because in Vietnam we had a draft. Now we don't have a draft, and basically you were forced to go. And unlike now, you know, as the war wound down, you know, people were forced out like they were at the end of World War II. So, I mean, that, you know, compared to, you know, that was a national disgrace. And I think we finally, with this bill, have begun to correct it.
Glenn Altshuler, Secretary Gates, did oppose some of this because he was afraid that people would leave the service if the benefits were too attractive. And, of course, there was a time, not now when unemployment has spiked, but there was a time when they could barely fill their recruitment quotas. How big a difference does it, should it make, Glenn Altshuler, if it's an all-volunteer army like now versus the huge draft of World War II? Does that change a society's contract with its servicemen and women?
I think it does, and it also, I think, to a great extent, the motivations for the two bills were different. That the Hagel-Webb bill's motivation is, to no small degree, a recruitment device to get more people to sign up. And the concern, as Mr. Korb indicates, of course, among some, was, yes, it might get more people to sign up, but it will mean retention will be difficult because people will then want to leave and get a generous benefit that is provided to them. So the original GI Bill we might call reward or compensation. The current GI Bill, much more, or to a greater extent, recruitment. It is also the case, as Mr. Korb said, that while there was unanimous support, which, as I said, was the case for the original GI Bill, there was more concern, less unanimous support for this bill, in part also because of the costs. People were concerned that it would be a budget buster.
Is there a different obligation, Larry Korb, if it's a volunteer army versus draft or not?
No, I think we have an obligation to anybody who's willing to put their life online, you know, for the country. And I think, as Professor Al Shuler mentioned, it was a disgrace what we did after World War One too. They weren't going to give them any type of bonus or anything until like 1945, and that's why you had the Veterans March. No, I think, and it's now, I think, part of our culture that if you're willing to fight and die for the country, the country owes you an awful lot, and this is one way, because it's not only good for you, it's good for the country if people go to school and people are able to get loans to buy, you know, to buy houses. And so it basically now I think we find, and this is the point we try to make in the book, I think we've turned the page. We now have accepted the fact that if you put your life on the line, whether you're drafted or you volunteer, we're going to take good care of you.
News for me. Just good news in store. So roll the car out, we gotta get moving. Hang the star out, my guy is approving. When we are out, we really get grooving. Life's improving, my guy's come back.
I'm Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about the amazing history of the GI Bill and what America's doing for a new generation of war veterans out of Iraq and Afghanistan. Glenn Altshuler is with us. He's at Cornell University and co-author of the new book, The GI Bill, A New Deal for Veterans. Lawrence Korb joins us from Alexandria, Virginia, former Assistant Secretary of Defense under Ronald Reagan. He's co-author of the new book coming out this summer, Serving America's Veterans. Let's get a call from Shannon in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Hi, Shannon. You're on the air.
Hi, Hi, how are you?
Very well.
I would just like to say that I think this new GI Bill really helps with morale, not only with the troops, but with their families as well. This bill, part of it is transferable to spouses and children, and I think it really finally starts to acknowledge the sacrifice that the families are making as well, especially right now when we have, you know, back-to-back 12 and 15-month deployments.
Are you or your husband just back, and from where, and do you intend to use
them? My husband just recently returned from a 15-month deployment in Iraq.
And how does your family intend or expect to use the new bill unfolding this summer, Shannon?
Well, my husband was in the Army prior to this tour and used the old GI Bill. And like your previous guest mm-hmm. was saying, was not able to graduate. We were a family with two kids going to school, struggling. The old bill just didn't cut it for us. So he's very close to graduating. So now he will be able to finish his degree and continue his career in the Army as an officer. And then the rest of the benefits can be used to help one of our children who has a learning disability get some extra help that he needs. I can, go to school. It's hard for spouses moving every 2 years
mm-hmm.
to
yep.
Have a career and that kind of thing. So I know that for the spouses, we were very excited to hear that somebody was actually giving us a little boost up, too.
Yeah, well deserved. Did you, you're right in the middle of all this. Is it something in your military community that people have really talked about? Has it affected morale?
Yes, I believe it has affected morale greatly. And I don't think that people, I think what happens is people join up thinking, oh, I'm going to get the education benefits. I know that was one of the things when my husband joined, mm-hmm. that was a big thing for him. But he has found his calling in the Army, and he has skills that in the civilian world he could make a lot more money than he is now, but he has a calling, he has a pull, he has a need, and that is what a lot of people that we associate with in the Army have that feeling. And so they will use the new GI Bill. You know, they're not in it to just, you know, do their 3 years and get out.
Yeah.
They'll use their bill to better their careers. They'll use their bill to allow their spouses to, you know, find something that they can find rewarding while they're living this difficult life.
Yeah.
And I just think it's a really, really fabulous thing. There's days where you're a spouse in the Army and you're, like, hitting your head against a wall, and then there's days where something like this happens, and it really is a victory for us.
Shannon, we appreciate your perspective from inside the military. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Let me go to Ruth Ann in Jeffersonville, Vermont. Ruth Ann, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Let me give you a little different perspective. My mom benefited from the GI Bill. And in fact, in my mother's family, she was the middle child of three and enlisted for World War II. And her two older sisters were nurses, so they were immediately officers. And she wanted to be an officer, and they said she didn't have the education for it, so she said, what the heck? She enlisted anyway. And actually told the people at Fort Dix she didn't enlist to serve close to home. She wanted to go overseas. So she ended up in England in Eisenhower's company and in Paris right after the liberation.
Wow.
And met my father there, and then was discharged because she was obviously unable to fulfill her duties because she was pregnant. And long story, my father was already married. But then my mother ended up as a single mother in 1946.
Did the GI Bill work for her? Did she take advantage of it?
Yes, absolutely. She went and got her master's degree in library science. And in fact, when she applied for the GI Bill, she had to go up to Cleveland. We lived in Youngstown. And they wanted to make sure that she made arrangements for me, the little baby girl of four, you know. And she assured them everything was taken care of, and she moved to Pittsburgh. She was a single mom. She used the GI Bill. She got her master's degree in library science and came back to Youngstown and helped college students at Youngstown State. And even after she retired, she cataloged a library for the blind out in California where she moved.
So that wave went right through her life. Ruth Ann, thanks for that. We got so many callers. Glenn, Larry Korb, I want to get a couple more here. Paul in West Yarmouth, Massachusetts. Paul, you're on the air.
I beg your pardon?
You're on the air, sir.
Okay, thank you very much. No, I was a veteran of World War II. I went in 43, got out in 46. I was a submariner, and I took advantage of the GI Bill by the 81st Congress. I in turn became, I got 2 degrees out of Boston University and a master's and a regular bachelor degree. And without those degrees, I would have been just something else. But the GI Bill came through for me. And as Tom Brokaw said, it leveled the playing field. And I enjoyed that very much.
Paul, thank you. Leveled the playing field. Let me save that phrase because that's the same that was offered by Kurt, another 82-year-old vet. And let me get one more right here from Mark in Portsmouth, Virginia. Mark, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you, Tom. I was calling because I've heard quite a few words used expressing the old GI Bill as being transformative, being a cultural and economic revolution. I'm a college professor, and I was calling to express a voice that can't call today, and that's those African-American soldiers who served in World War II, who the research shows because of the GI Bill being managed at the state level were discriminated against in receiving it. And I think that that's an issue that needs to be kept abreast, especially considering that it represented a wealth denial to many African Americans who could not purchase homes because they were denied the bill. And it also represented an income denial because of their lack of being able to get a college education, and also propelling them even higher or out of the middle class because of opportunities not to further their already undergraduate educations. And I think that that's an issue that the professor from Cornell, I don't know if he addresses that in his book, but there's been quite a bit of research done on that to the extent that we're still seeing first-generation college students coming into many of our universities who are African-American. And so I just want to point that out, that although we applaud the transformative nature and the cultural revolution, that because of the discrimination, there were many African-Americans who were denied these opportunities, and we're still seeing the ramifications of that showing up in the poverty figures and also other economic indicators, that this GI Bill could have truly been revolutionary and transformative in our communities.
You make a very important point there, and we'll go to it, but a wave raised here by the original GI Bill that was not apparently equally available to everyone with long-term consequences. Thank you very much for your call. Glenn Altschuler, you've got an entire chapter on race and gender and ethnicity in the original GI Bill. What about the complaint that Mark raises there about what it did and didn't do for minority veterans?
Let me make a couple of quick points, Tom. One, as far as women were concerned, an unintended consequence of the GI Bill was that so many male GIs were coming back to colleges and university that women were crowded out. And so women in that respect, non-GI women, suffered a bit because of the GI Bill.
Were the male returning vets given preference over women?
Yes.
Were they literally squeezed out of universities?
They were indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the number of housing slots available, because of the overall caps on enrollment, and the zeal to admit veterans.
What about women's vets? Were they given equal right to the seats?
They were given equal rights, but women vets used the GI benefit less than male vets, largely because the expectation at that time would be that they would get married.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as African Americans were concerned, many people don't know that African Americans were underrepresented in the armed forces, and they also disproportionately, more than whites, did not graduate from high school. So fewer of them were eligible for the GI Bill for college and university. And of course, as the caller said, it's true that the GI Bill did not buck segregation. And so only about 5,000 African Americans went to college and university in the North. The rest went to historically black colleges in the South. But having said that, I want to emphasize something.
Hmm.
African American GIs used the GI Bill benefited from them, often using sub-college training, as much or in as great or greater percentages than whites. So it's a half full, half empty story for African Americans. And we do deal with this at great length in the book. It's a fascinating story.
Career training there. But if this was transformative, if this was a huge rung of the ladder that so many white Americans stepped on, there can be a lot of reasons, but not nearly as many African Americans did, plain and simple.
Plain and simple, a smaller percentage were able to use the college and university benefit. And in that sense, one historian says the GI Bill was affirmative action for whites.
Larry Korb, one thing that really struck me here was this number that came out that only 23%, if I read this right, Glenn, only 23% of that 15, 16 million vets coming out of World War II had graduated from high school at all, white or black?
I mean, that's right.
Larry, that speaks to what a transformation this country went to pre and post-World War II with the GI Bill right at the heart of that and the power of legislation to be transformative. I mean, that is, as our caller said earlier, a cultural revolution.
There's no doubt about it. And that's why it's different now, because we have such a high percentage of people go to college. And it's important, particularly for enlisted people who join the service rather than going to college, to have that opportunity when they get out, because many of them join the service because they can't afford to go to college with these high costs. It also will help those who've been to college, particularly the officers, get a graduate education, which will make them more effective if they stay in the military or in society, because given the march of knowledge these days, the master's degree is almost like a college degree was a generation ago.
Larry, I've got a question perhaps you can answer here for us from the web, asking, you know, there's so many reservists who have and are serving in Iraq and Afghanistan, Army reservists in particular. Do they get the same benefit under the new GI Bill passed last year, going into effect this summer? Do you know, Larry?
Yeah, if they get called up, and that's the big thing, and that's the point that Rick Mays made. So if you get called up for, you know, a year, and then you can count your reserve service, cumulative. But it goes back to September 2001. And, you know, by and large, just about every reservist has been called up at least once, some more than once.
Let me get a call from Bloomington, Indiana, and Clark. Hi, Clark, you're on the air.
Hello, how are you?
Very well. What do you know, Clark?
Well, thank you for having me. There's a couple I'd like to make, and this is really a much bigger deal, I think, than people are really giving it credit for. The Chinese have a proverb that says, who plans for a year plants rice, who plans for a year plants trees, who plans for 10 years plants trees, who plans for 100 years educates man. And I don't think we can really afford not to educate our society in an information age. And if you think about what happened during the Vietnam era when I was served, and today the people who served during the Vietnam era were drafted, lost their college deferments, didn't have college deferments, weren't a privilege, and the GI Bill allowed them to be competitive with the people who had those college degrees.
Mm-hmm.
The people who serve today and also who served during the Vietnam era are disproportionately poor, of color, disadvantaged. And college education isn't available to them, or for a variety of reasons, not within their reach. And so by offering this to them, we're transforming a segment of society that would not otherwise have an opportunity to meet the needs of an information age. And everybody that's ever looked at this for any kind of a study has shown that if you really want to make a difference in issues like juvenile delinquency and crime rates, where he educates people. We can't afford not to do this.
Clark, you're terrific, and you, I think, take us to the biggest and most important point here. Glenn, you conclude in your book by saying that this 1944 bill, the GI Bill, survives as a remarkable response to a critical moment in the nation's history and as a standard against which to measure the present. Not just in going to veterans, but the idea of government sort of being useful in pushing society forward. How do you think we're doing by that standard, Glenn?
Well, I think the important thing is investment in human capital. And the GI Bill, of course, produced people who made more money, paid more back in taxes, and therefore paid back, so to speak, that investment in human capital. And that's what we're really debating now, not only with the stimulus package, but with the role of government. To what extent should government be investing in human capital and how might society benefit from that? And that's the contours of the debate that is part of the controversy around the stimulus package, but part of our understanding of what the legitimate role of government is in the 21st century.
Larry Korb, we've just got half a minute. Barack Obama speaks in these terms, but do you see the country stepping up this time with this kind of effectiveness in the face of national challenge?
Well, I think that the GI Bill is a step in the right direction, and I hope that now President Obama, he's talked about national service, and I hope we can give these type of benefits to people who, you know, join not just the military, but all of the Peace Corps, for example, Teach America, all the things that we can use. And I think then you would get the twofer. You'd get the service as well as the stimulus.
Lawrence Korb, co-author of the book coming out this summer, Serving America's Veterans. It's always good to hear from you, Larry. Thanks for joining us today.
Nice to be with you again.
And Glenn Altshuler, co-author of The GI Bill, A New Deal for Veterans. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Pleasure to be with you.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Beside my brothers and my sisters, I will proudly take a stand.